Okay, today's daf is Vav Basra daf pei. We left off on at daf pei. We're at the Mishnah on daf pei. So let's start a new Mishnah, brand new sugya today. Says the Mishnah. Again, we're continuing in things that when you sell, we're trying to figure out what's included in the sale, what is not included in the sale, as we've been saying the whole time. Now, the name of when we finally finish Hamocher Esasfino, which it's a pretty long parak, but the name of the next parak is Hamocher Peros. So the following parak is also going to be talking about things that are what is and is not included in a sale, but it's going to be talking about selling Peros. So it seems odd when you see the first two words of this Mishnah is Halokeach Peros. But you see the third word, and then it gives it away, that the peros we're talking about over here are in fact not fruits. Lokeach peros shovach mechavero. If you buy the production of a shovach, whatever the shovach produces, whatever the offspring of a shovach is, you buy that from your friend. So, meaning, what are you buying? You're buying, the shovach produces a lot of birds, because these birds reproduce, and they have children, and you're buying those children that are going to be born into this shovach. So one would think you could take everything, you could take all of the children, all of the baby birds that are born in the shovach. Says the Mishnah that excuse me, that it's not so, that Mavriach Brecha Rishona, that you leave the first set of children that are born in the Shovach, you leave them in the Shovach, they are not included in the sale. If you see the Rashbam, he says, Mafriach Halokeach Brecha Rishona, Maniach Lefroach Im Ha'em. What does it mean to be Mafriach? Mafriach means to make fly. You make the first Brecha fly. What does that mean? It means you leave it to be with the mother, to go do spend time with the mother. Osan lo machar, because those are not included in the sale. The very first set of birds that are born are not included in the sale of the shovach. Shekein derech hamorchun peiro shovach la'akiv brecha rishon alios savosli imahos. Why are they not included in the sale? You bought all of the birds that are supposed to be born in the shovach. No, but the point is that if you want to keep the mothers happy and producing children, you need to leave them at least with their first set of children. They need someone to hang out with. They need someone to shepnachas from. So you leave them with their first set of children, the skayim hashovach, in order to keep the shovach going, penyivruchu ha'imahos. Because otherwise, if the mothers have no reason to stay, then the mothers might run away. And that will destroy the entire shovach, and this guy never sold his shovach. He sold the peros of the shovach. And if you don't leave any babies for the mother to be with, then it's going to destroy the entire shovach. Hilchach mistama gam brecha rishona shel shana zu ikev mashovach tzui kiyum mashovach. So we have the right to assume that the brechos, the brecha rishona that comes for this year, he intends to keep and is not included in the sale of the shovach together with all the other brechos that are going to come. Now the Rishonim ask, it's a sugya that we really should have gotten into yesterday, but we didn't have time, where the Gemara mentioned and Tosos had a long Tosos discussing this in Ayin Tesam Beis, and that is the sugya of Davar Shaloba Liolam, right? That you can't be mocha Davar Shaloba Liolam. So the Rishonim will ask, how can a person sell to his friend the peros shovach, or whatever, what we're going to say next is the peros of the kaveres, things that are not yet here, things that are asidim lihivaled, they're going to be born, but they are not yet born. Isn't this a problem of kona davar shelo b'liolam? The yonim and the devorim that we're talking about over here, that you're selling to the lokeach, they're not ba'olam yet. So how does that work? How are you allowed to sell something that's lo b'liolam? So the Mukhi Yosef explains that the Mishnah holds like the Shita that ain't on the Makna Davar Shelo Bal Yalam. It can work even with the Shita that you're not allowed to be Makna Davar Shelo Bal Yalam. And the Mishnah comes to tell us how the din would be if they chose to validate the sale, meaning enochinami. If they wanted to be Mvatal this Kenyan, either one could be Mvatal this Kenyan. The Kenyan is not Chal. But if they want to live by their agreement, so then the Mishnah is telling us what the halacha would be. So really, the sale is not a valid sale. An unbelievable chiddush than Muki Yosef. Sale is not a valid sale. Nothing is sold, really. But if they both say, no, we gave our word that this is what we intended to do, we want to live by our agreement now, so what do we do? What's the appropriate thing to do? So That's what we're suggesting, that the appropriate thing to do, apparently, is to still keep one group of birds with the mother. Now, one of the Achronim quoted here in the Biurei Adaf, the Ayelas HaShachar, says what you see from the Menucha Yosef is even if you hold Eino the Makna Davar Shlobo Liolam and the Kenyan's not going to be Chal, still, they're really supposed to be Mekayim, their Dibur. If they gave their guarantee, they gave their word that this is what they're going to do and that they're interested in making this sale, they really should be Mekayim what they say. Because the truth is, if it weren't that they had some sort of din of being Mekayim what they said, then why would we have a mission about this? Meaning, do whatever you want. What do we care what you're doing? Meaning, the fact that there's a halacha that governs what is included and what's not included in a kinyan that isn't even a chal makes you believe that even though the kinyan is not chal, they're supposed to try to live up to that supposed kinyan that they wanted to do, to at least their intentions. Because if it's absolutely nothing, if it means nothing, and they're just doing whatever they want to do, so what do we care whether they leave an extra bird, they don't leave the extra birds? It doesn't make a difference. It's totally up to them. They're doing their own thing anyway. And he points out that there's a Tosfos in Bava Metzia Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis Dibur Maskel Hasan that seems to imply the same thing. It talks about someone who sells Peros Dekel, that even if though the kin is not chal, if your kadam the achlam, if the lokeach goes and eats it, even though the kin was not chal, the mocher can't be toveah him. The mocher can't have a tain on him. Why did you eat this Dekel? So the Tosfos explains over there the reason is because a person who's selling something, even if the sale is not valid, he wants to be omid b'diburo. He wants to have ne'emanos. So if he says he's going to be selling this, and then you eat what I told you I was just selling you, so I can't have a taina on you. If I want to be an ish ne'eman, I can't go and have a taina on you. The kinyan wasn't chal, so technically I can't have a taina on you. No, it must be that there is some sort of chiyuv to be omid b'diburo. But that's one answer in terms of the davar shlova liyolim. The simpler answer, though, that the Abrama and other Rishonim suggest, is that now our Mishnah is assuming like the Shita that holds that Adam Makna Davar Shalom Aliyalam. It's a major machlokas Tanaim. Rameir holds Adam Makna Davar Shalom Aliyalam. Stam Mishnah anyway throughout Shas is Rabbi Meir. So it's a big deal. So it's Rameir who holds Adam Makna Davar Shalom Aliyalam. That would be our Mishnah. A third approach is suggested by the Yad Ramah, and that is that even according to the Rabbanan, that Eino Adam Makna Davar Shalom Aliyalam, it could be that we're talking in a case where you say, Kinei Shovach Zeh Lipei Rosav. Not that I'm selling you the peros hashovach, but I'm telling you that I'm selling you the shovach for the rights of the peros that it produces. And that's an exception to the rule. If you formulate it in that way, if you formulate the sale in that way, even if generally you hold you can't be makna davar shalom al yolam, but over here I'm not selling you the peros, I'm selling you the shovach. The rights in the shovach, meaning there are two ways to divide ownership, right? There are two ways to divide ownership. Sometimes people want to be partners in a business, so they could either be partners in the entire business and everything is 50-50, or one guy is in charge of, let's say it's a company that does publishing of magazines and publishing of newspapers. So one guy gets the magazine revenue and the other one gets the newspaper revenue. They each own the business. It's not that that one guy is just getting money from the other. No, they are actual owners of the business. Just one guy is getting the revenue from this area of what they do, and the other one's getting the revenue from the other area of what they do. So too over here, when you say I'm selling you the shovach lipei rosav, it doesn't mean I'm selling you davar shalom aliyolam, I'm selling you the peros that are not yet here. No, you're becoming a partner in the shovach. But we're not just going to split everything, all rights of the Shovach evenly. We're going to split it along different lines. We're going to split it along the lines of, I'm going to keep everything that's not bird-related. I don't know what else the Shovach can produce that's not bird-related, but I'm going to keep the title to the Shovach, and you're going to be the owner in regards to the rights to have the peros that come out of the Shovach. That's how they divide the ownership. So that's how the Yad Ramah says, that could be what's going on in our Mishnah. It's not an issue of Makna Davar Shalom Aliyolam. Says the Mishnah Vayter, Peros Kaveres, if a person sells the Peros of a Kaveres, right, of a beehive, Notel Gimel Nachilim. So he takes the first three swarms of bees. What's the Gimel Nachilim? Says Rashbam, he explains, Rashbam had apparently pretty good knowledge about how bees work, and he explains, Gimel Chaburos Hanoldos animals, Rishona b'gimel zman mitas yamim o yud yamim ze achar ze. There are three groups that are going to be born 9 or 10 days apart from each other. Shekein derech hakaveres b'tchilas yimos hakayitz. This is what happens in beehives at the beginning of the summertime. Yotzim in hakaveres nachil shel dvarim yilados sheyaldu imahos. The first group of babies comes out of the beehive at the beginning of the summer. V'yoshen al anaf ha'ilan, and they sit on a branch of a tree. Umevi kaveres chadash umachnis l'tochav, and they bring a new kaveres and they bring him into that. V'chein l'sof teso yud yamim yotzin achil shel dvarim acher. And then after 9 or 10 days, another group of bees comes out. Umevi kaveres acheres rekanis umachnis l'tochav, and they also get a new kaveres and they bring that swarm into the new one. V'chein ashlishi v'korn lo tirtzil. V'yesha osin ad zayin v'ches pa'amim b'malchus yavan, that there are some beehives that are able to produce 7 or 8 different sets in Greece, but of Malchuzu, Rubanos and Gimel Pa'amim. But over here, usually it only happens 3 times, but Vashlishi Garua Mikulan, the third is the worst. It's like it decreases in quality as it goes. The Achron Garua. So the first 3 swarms of bees that come out, those are the most chashuv. After that, the quality diminishes significantly. So when you say that you're selling the peros of the kaveres, it means the chashuv peros of the kaveres. The first 3. Umisares, and you can be misares it. You should be misares it. What does it mean to be misares it? So the Gemara is going to have a machlokas about this. Sirus normally means to make something, to castrate something, right? Mm-hmm. To make something unable to have children. So what, you take the bees and you misares them? You make them unable to have children? Why would you be misares to be? And anyway, isn't it usher to be misares things? Sirus is nisudaraisa. You're not allowed to do sirus, so we're going to have to wait for the Gemara and see how the Gemara explains. Next, chalos tavash, if I sell the honeycombs, meniach beis chalos, you have to leave 2 chalos, meaning you have 10, 20 honeycombs, you have to leave 2, otherwise it's like selling the whole business. Zeisim lakutz, meniach shtei grufios, if I sell olive trees to cut, so you have to leave 2 branches, meaning I'm not selling the trees themselves, I'm just selling lakutz, I'm just selling the right to cut them. So you have to leave a couple of branches so that it can regenerate itself. Because if it doesn't regenerate itself, then you've taken the entire thing. Then you've removed any chance of any olive tree ever being here ever again. So you have to leave a couple of branches so that it can regrow itself. Okay, says the Gemara. Va'atanya brecha rishona v'shnia. You're telling me in our Mishnah that when a guy buys the perus shovach, he only leaves over the first brecha, but we have a brisa that says he leaves over brecha rishona vishnia, that he has to leave over to the original owner, not just the first brecha, the second brecha as well. So isn't that a problem? The brisa is against our Mishnah. Answers the Gemara, not a problem. Amar Rav Kana lo kasha. Hala, hali ima. You leave over for the original mother, you leave over its first set of children, but if you want that set of children to stay, you need to leave over its first set of children also. So you need to go down another generation. Again, you're trying to make sure that the mother stays. The mother's the original. You're trying to make sure she stays. So of course she needs her children there if she's going to stay. But what's going to keep that first set of children there to stay? It needs to keep its first set of children as well. That's what Rashbam says. Lokasha halava haliima haishnia abrecha rishona kai sheafriach gam brecha rishona shetele rahi brecha rishona l'sof peis chadashim. After 2 months, that first brecha rishona is going to give birth to its own brecha rishona, and you have to leave that there also, k'dei shiyu tzavos, so that they could be there for company, for le'iman, for their own mother. Rishona v'chein mashma hala haishni Allah lebrecha rishona mishayir nosa k'dei shetzkayimi. Right, that's what we're saying, that this second group is left there for the first group of children in order to encourage them to stay. Frek the Gemara, wait a second. Maishna ima demitstavsa abarta va'azavka deshavkinala inami titstavsa aima va'azuga deshavkinala. What keeps the mother behind? What keeps the mother staying? So presumably it's her family. How do you define her family? Well, there's her mate, right? The male that the mother is mating with, and then there is the baby. Right? That's what keeps the mother happy. That's what keeps the mother staying. So if that's the case, why don't you say the opposite as well? What will keep that first set of babies? Why do you need to leave a third generation? Why does the mother need to be a babi? Right? Why can't you just say that the second generation is going to stay on account of its mate plus its mother, its parents? So that's its family unit. If all you need is two, so don't you have two? You have its mother and its mate. Why do you need more than that? So says the Gemara, major yesod. Ima abarta mitstavsa, barta ima lo mitstavsa. A mother will follow where her children are. The children will not follow where the mother is. The children could care less where the mother is. They're going to go out on their own. But if their children are there, they're going to want to stay where their children are. This is an interesting insight that we find has parallels in human life as well, in the halacha, right? And there's a major sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin that makes the blatant assumption that a parent loves a child more than a child loves a parent. Right? That's the sugya, of course, of Babi Machteres. If you see someone coming through, tunneling through your house, coming through, breaking into your house in the middle of the night because they're desperate and they need to steal something from you, they're trying to steal something from you, and then you happen to notice that it's your father coming and he's trying to steal something from you, the halacha is, if you kill him, it is not considered self-defense. Because there's no way, even if you were to confront him, there's no way he would ever kill you. So it's not self-defense to go and kill him. But if it's your child that's coming through to steal, if you kill him, it is self-defense. Because if you confront him and you try to stop him, he might kill you. A parent would not kill a child, but a child would kill a parent. I mean, the question is, what's the plan? And again, we're obviously not talking about a parent-child who have the greatest relationship in the whole entire world. The father's breaking into the kid's house to steal something, or vice versa. So obviously we're not talking about the greatest relationship, but we assume a parent is a parent. The parent breaks into a child's house. His plan B is not to kill the child and make away with the money. His plan B is to get caught, be embarrassed, and deal with it. It's not to kill the child. The child's plan B, if he accidentally wakes up the parent as he's trying to steal something, is if the parent confronts me, I'm going to kill him. So that's what we assume, that the love a parent has for a child is more intense than the love a child has for a parent. It reminds you a little bit of the Gemara in Erevin. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an essay in one of his books where he addresses the question of whether there is an ethic independent of Torah. That do we define ethics and morals by Torah only, or is there such a thing as an ethical moral person? Let's say a guy who's an ethical moral person. Are they really ethical? Is it possible that without the guidance of Torah, they could be a truly ethical person? So he says, at first glance, it's an open and shut case because it's an afna gemara in Maseches Erevin. What does the gemara say? That if the Torah were not given to us, we would be able to learn midos tovos from the animal world, and it gives examples. This animal is a tsunua, and this animal is humble, and this, right, tells you about the different animals and what their midos are. And if you study it enough, and you study science, you study the world HaKadosh Baruch Hu put around us enough, you see that you see so many of the lessons of the Torah. After all, we're just reading in these parshiyos about Avraham Avinu. What do you think he did? Right, he was able to look at the world HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and through the world HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, put together the Torah. Basically, figure out what the Ratzon Hashem was in any given situation. So this is a little bit reminiscent of that. We're given a little bit of human psychology already in the Bria. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look at these animals. That if you want to keep the birds there, you got to keep the children of the birds. You keep the parents of the birds, and the birds aren't interested. And that helps us understand what the human psychology is as well. So anyway, says the Gemara Vayter, Peros Kaveres, so he said that if you sell the peros of the Kaveres, of the beehive, notel gimel nechilin umesari. So you take the three nechilin, you take the first three swarms, and then you're mesaris. So frankly, more about mem mesarsan. How are you mesaris them? Right? Says Rashbam, the assumption is that we're talking about sirus means castration. Sirus zachros mashma pshuta shel mishnah. That's the pshuta shel mishnah, that you take the first three swarms of bees, and then you're mesaris them. So what are you mesaris them with? So what kind of question is that? Well, we're asking a veterinary question. If you're a veterinarian, you need to know how would a vet be mesaris bees? Sounds very difficult to be mesaris a bee. No, that's not what we're asking. We don't need to know that. What we're asking is, why are you Masaris them? How can you be Masaris them? Isn't it usher to be Masaris any living creature? The Torah, when it asks who's being Masaris something, right, it's lav dafka big animals. It's not only your dog that you can't be Masaris. You can't be Masaris any animal. The smallest creature, Sefer HaChinuch explains that it relates to the idea of Pru Revu, that we have the world is meant to be populated and it's meant to be, so you have Pru, so the opposite of populating and growing the world is when you take away the ability to populate and grow the world. So that's the issue of Sirus. Question is, if it's really Puruvu, what's it got to do with animals? But no, it means in a broader sense Puruvu. It doesn't mean in the mitzvah per se of Puruvu. It means the keeping God's creations going in this world. That we actually do believe on some level that if there's an endangered species or something, you try to protect them. You try to make sure that they have the ability to reproduce and they have the ability to exist. God put them here in this world to exist, and we let them exist, and we try to encourage their existence, and we certainly wouldn't be misaris them in order to stop their existence. So it's an issur in the Torah. So what do you mean we're misaris them? You're not allowed to be misaris. This is a very halacha l'maisa shayla for dog owners, because if they want their dogs not to be aggressive, they have to be misaris them. And legally or whatever, just practically, they need to be misaris them. But of course, it is an issur d'oraisa to be misaris them. So you got to figure out if there is a heter. Whatever the heterim are, I asked Rav Willig once, he wasn't too happy with any of the heterim. He said, from people shouldn't own a dog, and you won't have any. Well, you give it to the vet, so it's Amir La'akum. Right, so you have, assuming it's an akum, it's another issue. And the Lifnei Iver, whatever it might be. So it's a major sugya. What you're allowed to do? You sell the dog to him, and then he's doing it on his own, and you're not telling him to do it. He's not doing it. He's not your shliach. Try to whatever it is. So you have to figure something out, or just not have a dog, and then that could also solve the problem. Okay, so says the Gemara, "Bamem misaris." So what are you misaris them with? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel bechardel. You're misaris them with mustard. How do you sari some with mustard? What do you do? So says Rashbam, no, you know what it means? La'chilin chardal, you're going to feed them chardal. Amri b'marav mishmed Rabbi Yossi back in the Gemara Rabbi Chanina lo chardim l'sarisan. It's not that mustard actually is misaris them. That doesn't cause them to be unable to have children. El mitoch shapien chad chozos va'ochlos estufshanan. But since their mouths are very spicy from eating the chardal, from eating the mustard, they go back and they eat their own honey. And that's going to be misaris them. How is that misaris them? Says Rashbam, umitoch svi usan betelos miperi verivya. Since they're so satiated from eating their own honey, so they're going to be bottled from puruvu because they're satisfied already. Their whatever physical desires they have are already satisfied, so they're not interested in puruvu. V'chozos also svash, and therefore they're going to go back to honey making because they're not going to be interested in puruvu. Rabbeinu Chananel al pirish ochlos svash shebenikve hachalos. Meaning that they apparently the bees would go into these little crevices in the honeycombs, and that's where they would have children. But they would hide behind whatever honey is there and have the children. But if they eat up all that honey, then they're not going to have the children, and therefore in that way it's misaris them. So according to Rabbeinu Chananel, you're not actually, according to both, you're not actually being misaris them. You're discouraging them from having children. You're not taking away their ability to reproduce. You're taking away their desire to reproduce, right? You're taking away their desire. So that's not in this sort of... So if the Gemara's question was, Bamem Misarisan, the Gemara's question was, how's this mutter to do? What are you doing? The answer is, you're not really being Misaris them. You're just discouraging them from reproducing. And guess what? Next year, they're going to reproduce again. It's only going to stop them for right now. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, sirus, over here, sirus doesn't mean castration. It's something else entirely. It means to switch off, right? It means to switch from one to the other. You take three besirus, three swarms besirus, says the Rashbam. Rabbi Yochanan, lav asirus shel zachros mayri klal. We're not talking about being masaris a zachar. El hay sirus lashon diluku. It means to skip, kemo, karas sirusin b'masachas Megillah Yerushalmis. Like the Yerushalmi Megillah says, if you read the Megillah sirusin, what we have in Bavli is sirugin, right? But in Yerushalmi it's sirusin. What does it mean, sirusin? It means you skip from one place to the other. This is what Mishnah is saying. Notel gimel nechilin al yedei diluk. Rishon shlishi v'chamishi. You take three swarms, but not the first three. You take the first, the third, and the fifth. And you leave the second and fourth behind. And this way they divide the good stuff and they divide the bad stuff. Let the guy who's selling not only keep the weakest, let him keep some of the stronger sets as well. Like the second set, which is going to be stronger than the sets that come after it. Because when people sell a kaveris, that's typically what they intend to do. They don't intend to give you everything. But masnisatana, notel gimel lechilin b'zeh achar zeh, and in the Brisa we learned that you take three swarms one after the other. Mikan ve'elach, after the first three, then you switch off. Notel achas m'niach achas. Right, different than our mission of the first three b'sirus, and different than what Rabbi Yochanan originally said. Okay, chalos devash m'niach shtei chalos. The Mishnah said that if you buy honeycombs, you have to leave the guy the two honeycombs to keep. Now, important introduction to this next piece is that we know that dvash is one of the shivas hamashkim that's makshir of food to be mekabel tumah. For food in order to be mekabel tumah, it can't just touch something. Tell me that's not going to do anything. It first has to be huchsha lekabel tumah. How does it become huchsha lekabel tumah? So once it's talish min hakarka, if it comes in contact with one of the Zayin Mashkim, one of the seven liquids, and you're okay with that, the owner is okay with the fact that it's come in contact with one of the seven liquids, the contact is something that the owner would have wanted, so then it becomes Hukshar Lekabel Tuma. So the one of the Zayin Mashkim that's Makshir Lekabel Tuma is Dvash. Now the source of it is from the fact that it says in the Chumash, Vayinikehu Dvash Misela, that we refer to Dvash as Yanika. Yanika normally means sucking out a liquid. So apparently we assume Dvash is a liquid, because really it's somewhere in between. It's neither a liquid nor a solid, but we assume it has a din of a liquid. So that's true both to be in terms of being Makshir Ochlam to Mekabel Tumah, and in terms of being Mekabel Tumah itself as a Mashka that becomes a Rishon L'Tumah, it has a din of a liquid. But that's only by Dvash that's already been removed from the Kaveres. But Dvash that's still in the Kaveres, so that's Machlokas Tanayim. If the Dvash is still attached to the Kaveres, does it have a din of a liquid or does it not? So Rabbi Eliezer holds that Dvash Bikavarto is not Mekabel Tumah at all, because it's considered Mechubar L'Karka. It's still considered Mechubar L'Karka. Then the Gemara is going to darshan. It relates to the pasuk that the pasuk says Vayitbolosab biyaros hadvash ma'in yinyarei sal dvash. The Gemara is going to darshan on the base. What's the relationship between a forest and dvash? What does one have to do with each other? So you say no. Just like a ya'ar is mechubar lekarka, dvash is also considered mechubar lekarka, and therefore it's not an ochel nor is it a mashka. And even if you are mechashiv alav, you think that you want to treat it as an ochel, it's still not tamei tumas ochlim. If you're mechashiv lemashkim, it's not tami tumas mashkim. It's neither an ochel nor mashke. It's mechubar lekarka. That's the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. The Chachamim say that dvash that's still in the kaveres is considered talush. It's considered already detached, and therefore it's mekabel tuma, and it's mekabel. It's nitma b'tumas ochlim, even without any sort of machshava. So long as it's in the kaveres and it's mixed in with the shava of the kaveres, it's part of the kaveres. It's considered an ochel. It's not considered a mashke yet. When is it considered a mashke? Once it's removed from the kaveres. That's the shita of the chum. So again, Rabbi Lezer's shita is, so long as it's in the kaveres, it's neither an ochel nor a mashke, it's just mechubar lekarka, it's not mekabel tumah at all. And once it's removed, then it becomes a mashke. According to the chachamim, no, while it's still in the kaveres, it's an ochel. Once it's removed from the kaveres, then it becomes a mashke. This is a discussion in the Rishonim with what the halacha would be. If you have a discussion in the Achronim, really, in the Magen Avraham, in the Aruch Chaim Kufnun Ches, what the halacha would be if you had Dvash Korush, and in general, by these Ochlin, by these Mashkim, rather, what if they congeal? are they still called a mashka? Meaning they lose the qualities of a mashka, they become solid like a rock. So would they still have a din of a mashka? So the discussion with Magen Avraham, he quotes in the name of the Birchas HaZevach, that like the Shitas HaRambam, and Tumas Ochlin, that we pass like the Rambam, Ochlin, Aleph, Yotes, that Dvash Karush was not a mashka. So whatever it is, so that's the maybe you would have the same thing by dam, right? Dam karush. Is dam karush does have a din of dam or does not have a din of dam? The shear of dam, interestingly, when of the isra achilas dam, the Gemara says ochel kezayis dam. Now generally by mashke, the halacha, the shear is never a kezayis. The shear of all mashkim is always a revius. Kezayis is for a solid. So there's a Mi'iri. The Mi'iri says in a couple of places that Ha'ochel Kezayis Dam Karush. That's your only chayiv if it's Bekezayis, not Berevius, if it's actually congealed, because that changes its status. But Pashas is most Rishonim hold that Dam, for whatever reason, is considered to be Ochel, is an Isra Chila, rather than Isra Shtia, even though Dam generally is a liquid. But okay, that's a side point. Says the Gemara Baiter, so Chalos Tavash, you leave Shtei Chalos. Amar Rav Kahana, Tavash Bekaveres, Eini Yotze, Midei Machal Yolam. So Rav Kahana says, Tavash in the Kaveres never leaves the status of Machal Liolam. Liolam doesn't mean Liolam, means so long as it's in the Kaveres. Right? So long as it's in the Kaveres, it still has the status of a Machal. Alma Kasava Lobay Machshava. Sounds like he holds that you don't need Machal in order to give it the status of ochel in the first place. Meisve, but we ask a contradiction. Dvash bekaveres ain't a lo echel v'lo mashke, but it says we have a stira because it says that dvash in the kaveres is neither an ochel nor a mashke. How can he say that it's automatically an ochel? So Rabbi lo tzricha lo son shtei chalos. So two answers. One answer Rabbi says is the difference between those first two chalos and all the other chalos. So Rabbi says that it's that dafka by those first two chalos that you leave there year round for the dvorim to be able to use. So that's what we refer to as is going to be a machal liolam. Rava Amar, Rava says different answer. That Reb Lazar he, no, we're assuming like Reb Lazar. Titnan, we just mentioned before, there is a machlokas tanaim. Titnan kaveres tvorim, Reb Lazar Amar, harei ki karka. Reb Lazar says a kaveres tvorim has a din of karka. It's considered machubra la karka. It's neither an ochel nor mashka. Because from the prosbul, therefore a kaveres tvorim, you can write a prosbul. You need to own karka in order to be able to do a prosbul, right? Machlokes Rishonim, why that's so, but you need to own karka in order for a prosbul to be done. What if you own a kaveres devarim? So Rabbi Lazar says that good enough. Then a kaveres tumah b'mkama, it's not a kaveres tumah b'mkama because again it has a din of karka. V'arodim menah b'shabbes chayiv chatas. And if you remove something from the kaveres, you remove honey from the kaveres on Shabbos, you're chayiv chatas because it's considered kotzer. That you're taking something off from mechubar lekarka. The Chacham say, no, it's not considered mechubar lekarka. Ain kosvul not prosbul. Ain okikarka. Umekabelas tuma. It is mekabimakom. It is mekabel tuma bimakom. I wrote the men of Shabbos potter. If you remove from it in Shabbos, that's fine. It's potter. It's not going to be considered kotzer. So if you assume like the sheet of Rabbi Lazar, then you understand very well that it's not going to have a din of a meichel or a mashka because it's still mechubar lekarka. But if you assume like the sheet of the Chacham, then you understand that you're going to say that it has a din of a meichel. So that's the machlokas. So again, keep in mind two answers, Abaye and Rava. Right, Rava was the one who said that there's a chiluk between Olson Shtei Chalos and the other Chalos, whereas the Rava said that no, that's not that there's a chiluk between Olson Shtei Chalos and the other Chalos. It's simply machlokas tanaim. Now, does Rava disagree with that chiluk between Olson Shtei Chalos and the other Chalos? If you look at Rashbam, Rava Amar Rabbi Lazarhi, Mishum Destam Dvash Lo Mashmale Shtei Chalos. Why does Rava disagree with Abaye's answer? So says Rashbam, because normally when you say Dvash, it doesn't imply only two Chalos. It implies whatever Dvash there is in the Kaveres. So Rav would rather say it's going like a Das Yachid than to say that it's going only on the first two Chalos. Now, from that Rashbam, it's not so clear that he would disagree about the first two chalos. It could be he would agree that you would distinguish between the first two chalos and the rest. It's just that he doesn't read it that way. He doesn't read that that's what it's talking about. And when it talks about chalos, he assumes it's referring to all of them. Okay, but anyway, says the Gemara Vayter, where are we up to? So, yes, it says the Gemara, Amar Blazar, my time with Rabbi Eliezer. Rav Eliezer asks, what's the reason for Rabbi Eliezer that it's considered to be mechubel karka tchsiv? Vayit balosa biyaras hadvash v'chimay inin yar etzal dvash. What does yar have to do with dvash? Lomelcha ma yara. Tell us when the Shabbos chayiv chatos. Just like a forest, if you cut something from a forest on Shabbos, you chayiv chatos. After dvash harodim in the Shabbos chayiv chatos. So to dvash, when you take honey off of the dvash on Shabbos, you chayiv chatos. Right. So it's that's the comparison to the yar. Where is that pasuk that about a yaros of dvash? So we've discussed that. It's in Shmuel Aleph. It's referring to that's the pasuk when Yonah's son goes with his nosei kelev to check out the enemy camp and see if they have a chance of defeating them, and he goes actually on a major stealth mission to go into the enemy camp. And while he was gone, he didn't hear that his father had issued an edict that anyone in the Jewish army who eats anything that day is going to be killed. So he didn't know, and on his way back, he saw some dvash. Now, in the context of the Chumash, it's Yaros HaDvash. In the Navi, rather, Pashas is, it's not actually referring to honey, it's referring to sap from a tree, because it's dvash that comes from a forest. Right, so Pashas says it's sap from a tree. He takes a little taste of it, and his father finds out that someone ate, and his father wants to kill him. But the Klal Yisrael gets up and says, "How could you kill him? This is the man who saved us. He did so much good for us," and they save his life. But anyway, that's the context of Yaros HaDvash. Says Gemara Meisvei, Dvash has a mikavato ein lochel v'mashka. Dvash that flows from the kaveres is neither an ochel nor a mashka. Bishlam l'abaye nicha l'rav akasha. So according to Abaye, that works out great because he says that Dvash kaveres is referring to the shtei chalos. Over here also referring to the shtei chalos that we say are neither an ochel nor a mashka. But according to Rav, who didn't want to distinguish between the shtei chalos and the rest, so even if you can say it's like a blazar, once it's zav, once it flows out, it's no longer considered karka. So why would you say that that someone who that dvash has zav mikavarto, that dvash that flows from the kaveres is not an ochel nor a mashka? So it's difficult according to Rav. So Rav kugon shezav al gabi klei. No, the situation is that it flows onto something disgusting, so it never takes on the status of a usable mashke. Ravach b'Yakov Amar Gon Shezov Al Gabi Kashkashin. It flows onto like splinters or something that make it completely unusable. Not that it's disgusting; it's just unusable. And since it's unusable, it never takes on the status of a mashke. Very similar to the things we have in Hilchos Shabbos, also, right? When we talk about dash, when we talk about schita, so it's one of the ways of avoiding a schita issue is by making the liquid come out directly onto something that will immediately destroy the liquid, right? That's an eitzah many of the posts can give when it comes to a woman who's nursing if she needs to pump in order to not be in violation of dash, that they'll pump directly into a bottle that has salt or something in it that will ruin the milk right away. Certainly, assuming that they're just pumping to relieve themselves of pressure and pain, not to feed the baby. You don't want to feed the baby something that has salt in it, obviously. Meisvei tvash bekavarto eino. Dvash in the kaveres is neither an ochel nor a mashka. Chish of alav lachila mitami tumas ochlin. So if you intend to eat it, then it's mitami tumas ochlin. L'mashkin, if you intend to use it as a mashka, mitami tumas mashkin will then be mitami tumas mashkin. So bishlam l'abayi nicha. So again, according to Abayi, that works out great because he said it's talking about the shtei chalo, so it's not a stira. El Rav Akasha, but according to Rava, it's very difficult. Rava never made this distinction. Meaning, according to Rava, it's going to be difficult to Rav Kahana because for sure. It's not going like Rav Lazar, right? Because if we're saying that Machshava does something over here, Rav Lazar says Machshava doesn't do anything. It doesn't make it tallish at all. So this is difficult. So Amalecha Rava Tritzachi, you have to read it as follows: Chishav Lava Achila Ein Ometami Tumas Ochlin Lamashkin. No, it means to say just the opposite, that Machshava does nothing for you. So Rava says, good, and that's exactly Rabbi Eliezer's Shita, Rabbi Eliezer's Shita, that Machshava does absolutely nothing for you. Tani Kavas said Rav Kahana, Dvash Mekavarta Mitami Tumas Ochlin, Shalom Machshava. We have a brisa like Rav Kahana, that Dvash in the Kaveris is Mitami Tumas Ochlin without any Machshava. Zesim Lakutz Maniach Shte Grufios, Tan Rabban, Halokech Ilan Mechaver Lakutz. If a person buys a tree from his friend in order to cut it down, Magvia Menakarka Tefach Vekotes, he's got to leave a stump of one. He buys a basul sashikma, he needs to leave a stump of three tvachimai so that it can regenerate itself. Sadana shikma beis tvachim. Bekanim grafanim mina pekakel lemaila. If he's buying kanim grafanim, he needs to leave from the knot in the stump and above. That's where you can cut off, only above the knot. but he needs to leave up until the knot. But the kolam ba'arazim chofer mefarish l'fishayim gizon machlif. But by the kolam and arazim, he can dig and take out all the roots because it's not growing back anyway once you cut down the top of it. Ubesulus hashikma gimel tefachim. Wait a second, by besulus hashikma, you really need to leave gimel tefachim in order for it to regenerate. Urimini, we have a stirein kotzim besulus hashikma b'shvius mneishi avoda. You're not allowed to cut down besulus hashikma during shmita because that's considered avoda sakarka. Rabbi Yudomer kedarko aser. Now, kedarko, you can't cut it down, but if you're magbia 10 tefachim, you leave 10 tefachim high off the ground, you can then cut down above that. Or you can flatten it even with the earth. Sounds like, when is it going to be not good for the tree? Only if you flatten it completely. But it sounds like if you leave anything above ground, that's going to be okay. So you don't need to leave 3 tefachim. It sounds like even leaving anything above ground will allow it to regenerate. So Rabbi, gimel tefachim malila. Rabbi says no. 3 tefachim is definitely good for it and allows it to regenerate. Me'im aretz vadei kashila. When you flatten it with the ground, that's vadei no good for it. That vadei will destroy it. Mikan ve'elach lo makshi kashila v'lo ilui malila. But in between, it's neither. It's neither good nor bad for it. We're not sure. Meaning, Tos points out, it doesn't mean it's neither. It means it can go either way. Sometimes it will be able to regenerate. Sometimes it won't be able to regenerate. It's a suffake. Not that it's neither. It's a suffake. So gabi shviya savdina midi devadei kashila. So by shmita, you need to make sure that you're doing something that's definitely not good for it. It shouldn't be considered an avodah sakarka during shmita. Why? Suffake d'oraisa l'chumra. That's simple. Gabi mecha chumemker avdina midi devadei malila. By mecha chumemker, you want to make sure you leave the guy with something that will definitely be okay for him, that it should definitely regenerate. Because that's the assumption, that's his das, that he intends to be left with something that could definitely regenerate itself, and therefore you leave him something that for sure is okay, and that's why you leave him 3 tefachim to play it safe. Okay, we didn't quite get to the Mishnah, so we'll pick up Bez Hashem from Bid Dekalim Uba Arazim tomorrow.